The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Small and Microcap News on Friday, the 7th of October, 2025. There's very little news out today, really, on companies. There's two companies I want to talk about a bit later. But let's start off with, I can't help myself. By the way, I'm Justin Waite. I've got to say that because someone said before they didn't know who I was. I listened to the podcast first time and they liked it. They didn't know who I was. But anyway, I can't help coming back, gravitating back towards Rachel Reeves. Driving me nuts because there's all kinds of news coming out about the budget. And I can't see anything yet. Why is it only the bad news being flagged? Surely there's some good news in the budget. Surely. But you must understand, this is, you know, the bad news is probably suppressing some investment. So it's the uncertainty of knowing what's in there, isn't it, that prevents people from investing. So I'm hoping we get over this, this hump, this obstacle. But at the moment, the biggest obstacle to UK growth is Rachel Reeves. How ironic is that, that she's started on a platform of growth and everything she's done has been anti-growth pretty much. Even delaying the budget has been anti-growth. You know, it's nuts. The report said apparently that she will break the Labour manifesto about raising tax on working people. Do you remember they haven't said that so often now? They've tried to drop that, haven't they? When you come up with these stupid phrases, you get hung by them eventually, especially when it doesn't hold any water. Anyway, apparently British people earning more than 75 grand a year could pay thousands of pounds more in tax should Rachel Reeves raise income taxes by 2p, while cutting national insurance by the same percentage for those earning under 50,000. They are making policy on which they think. That's the trouble. With Labour, they have this, you know, socialist sort of background. And they're making policy on what her and Starmer think is the right thing to do. And you've often heard them say this sometimes. They'll say something, and they obviously knock around these ideas, you know, in cabinets or whatever, or in private meetings. And I've heard them say quite a few times now, that's the correct thing to do. And Starmer's the same. That's the correct thing to do. There's obviously been, you know, talked about these phrases because they're both saying it. And that's not a natural phrase to say. This is the correct thing to do. You can't just state something's the correct thing to do and people accept it, you know? They should not be doing what they think is the correct thing to do, but what is the right thing for the economy in the country. What you think is the right thing and what is actually the right thing are two different things. And they often say, oh, the broadest shoulders should take the most weight. Well, they are. Where does this come from? Where's this myth that people who are earning lots of money don't pay tax? Because they do. Listen to these figures. 24 to 25. The top 1% of income taxpayers, which is around 320,000 people, paid, this is top 1%, they paid 28.2% of all income tax, but only earned 13.3%. And this is up from 22.7% in 2025-26, up to 28.2% now. This means the top tier of income tax earners paid 2.1 times their share of income taxes, up from 1.9 times 2 decades ago. Now, the top 10% of income tax earners, around about 3 million plus people, paid, this is the top 10%, paid 60.2% of income tax, when they earned about 35.1%. And this is up from 52.9% 2 decades ago, so 20 years ago. The bottom 50% of taxpayers contributed 9.5%. So where is this myth coming from that, you know, the people without the numbers tend to say, oh, wealthy people need to pay more tax. You know, the broader shoulders need to take the most weight. So let's go through that again. The top 1% pay 28% of all tax in the UK. The top 10% pay 60.2% tax. The middle 40% pay 30%. And the bottom 50% pay 9.5%. So if you are going to disincentivize people to pay tax, or you raise tax. And I did do a podcast a couple of days ago about the Laffer curve. It's worth, you know, looking into just Art Laffer, who was the guy that sort of popularized this, you know, this issue, tax issue of not, you know, you can only tax to a certain level. You start getting less income tax, the more you put tax it. People just go elsewhere. They start avoiding tax. But if you realize the top 10% of earners pay 60.2% of tax, and you encourage them to move away from this country, the country's finances, you know, will deteriorate markedly, significantly. What you want to do, it's not what Labour are doing, you want to encourage these wealthy people to your country because they pay the majority of the tax. They're supporting everyone else. But no, let's punish them. Let's put more tax on them. And so they end up leaving. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. From an economic standpoint, it makes no sense. It's nonsensical. But it's the correct thing to do. It's the correct thing to do, they keep saying. My word. Also, one other thing about Rachel Reeves, she cools on big cash ISA reforms. Apparently, they're going to cut, you know, the ISA allowance for cash. This is not stocks and shares. From 20,000, you're allowed 20,000 per year to put into your cash ISA, and it's exempt from tax. We're going to reduce it to 10,000, but now apparently he's going to go 12,000. They're saying Reeves could also look to tweak offerings for stocks and shares ISAs at the upcoming budget. That's got to be a positive thing. She knows that you need to get more investment in Britain. One such change reportedly being considered is to push ISA providers to make savers allocate 25% of investments into UK equities. Do you know what? I read one bit of good news, and then all of a sudden, just nonsense, foolhardy suggestions from Labour. You can't force people who have never invested before to just start investing by reducing the cash allowance in the ISA. It's not going to happen. You know, some people like, well, 70, 80, 90 years of age maybe in that, or the younger, and they never, ever looked at, you know, investing in publicly listed companies. Doesn't happen. What you need to do is educate people and provide incentives, not just cut the cash ISA. That's ridiculous. You know, if you do cut the cash ISA, what they'll do is just those people will take their money out of the cash ISA. They're not going to automatically invest it. They want the cash. That's the whole point. So just take the cash out and put it somewhere else. Simple as that. Now, what they could do is incentivize investment. Not punish people who are not investing, but incentivize investment. It's two different things. You imagine this. If they kept the cash ISA allowance at £20,000, but raised the stocks and share ISA allowance to 40K, people would start looking at that, wouldn't they? They'd say, why is that 40K? I could put 40K in there as long as I invest stocks. And look at funds. Funds are a very good way to start investing. Low-cost diversified funds. You know, even if you bought the top, you know, over several years, you'll still make money. The reward is low compared to, you know, individual stocks and shares, but obviously the risk is high in individual stocks and shares. They're more volatile, but funds are not so much. And, you know, you put a regular amount into a fund, a low-cost diversified fund, which I even say in the book should be the backbone to your, you know, your portfolio, you'll make money better than you would do in a bank. So that's the way you need to go, but investing in low-cost funds, and the way you do that is incentivize people by making the allowance a lot bigger, and people will start looking at that. People don't want to miss out on making money, because they don't. First of all, they don't want to lose their money. And you see, you know, if you look at the sort of 10, 20-year track records of certain funds, they're very good. It's a good track record, your long-term track record. So just start incentivizing people. Also a bit of bad news here. Retail footfall sinks for the sixth straight month as Brits fear budget taxes. Well done, Rachel. Total activity fell by 0.7% in October, led by drops in shopping centre and retail park footfall, according to the British Retail Consortium. The UK's retail sector has been hemorrhaging jobs, with 10% reduction in the workforce since 2015. Another 10% is expected to go in the next 3 years. In fact, there's a solution to that. One other thing, ITV has confirmed it's in talks about the possible sale of its media and entertainment operations to rival Sky. They're looking at Sky, said for an enterprise value of 1.6 billion. And in fact, I think ITV, how much is up today? ITV, it's up 15% a day. So the studios is not for sale, but that is, so that's what, the 2.5 billion market capitalization of that, but the studios is not for sale apparently, so obviously strip that out. And one thing I've just been watching, this is, I'm starting to buy into this. I do hold a fund, only a small amount, in robots and automation. It's, if you want to know the ticker, it's RBOT is ticker, okay? Robots and automation. And how many holdings does it have? Let's have a look here. Holdings, I don't know what it says here. Total expense ratio, 0.4%. It has, I can't see how many shares, but it's quite a few companies. 3.8 billion, is it? Yeah, is the assets of the fund. Anyway, I've been watching Elon Musk's robots. He just had a sort of a shareholder meeting. It wasn't kind of the shareholder meeting we assume, like around a desk in a boring office somewhere, or just with a trestle table put up and a couple of shareholders in front of it. It was quite a funky affair, like almost a, you know, like a new band would sort of play. It's a stage, some nice lighting, some sleek stage walking areas. They had bots, robots either side of it, Optimus robots. But his £1 trillion pay deal is approved by Tesla shareholders. Apparently 75% voted for the pay deal. But people keep saying, oh, he's the first trillionaire, you know, because of his pay deal. But there's a lot of milestones he's achieved to get that. So this is what they have to achieve in the next decade to achieve this £1 trillion pay deal. Delivering 20 million Tesla vehicles and 1 million robots. 1 million robots. I don't know what they're at the moment, but it's nowhere near even 1,000, I don't think. Getting 10 million subscriptions to Tesla's full self-driving feature. Bringing 1 million self-driving robot taxi vehicles into commercial operation. Earning up to $400 billion in core profit. Now, in 2024, Tesla earned $7.1 billion. They've got to earn $400 billion. And eventually lifting Tesla's overall market cap to 8.5 trillion. It's currently 1.4 trillion. That's a big ask to get that $1 trillion. But you know what? I just look at these robots and the advancements are accelerating very quickly. And I think Tesla are going to start selling them next year. And looking ramped up to some million bots in the next few years. But there's other companies out there doing it as well. And it's quite clever because why they're based, you know, why they're humanoid, why they look like humans is because they realize that everything in our environment, in the world around us, has been designed for humans. So it makes a lot of sense, you know, keyboards, door handles, driving cars, cooking utensils, everything, cupboards, you know, mugs, they've all been designed for humans. So if you replicate the human form, and apparently Elon Musk said the most difficult thing to replicate is the hand. There's nothing more dexterous than the hand because it not only uses muscles within the hand and it can turn and alter, but also in the forearm as well. And there's so many different things the hand can do, from very small, you know, very fragile touches and delicate touches of picking up an egg to maybe, you know, hitting something, to swinging a baseball bat or whatever. There's so many different things a hand can do. The sensitivity, the touch, it's very hard as they're trying to crack this. But by looking at it, and just looking at the release dates, production dates of most robots, I'd say we are literally 2 or 3 years away from robots being used for household chores, as long as the price is right. There was a price suggestion. When I saw the price, I thought, I'm going to buy one of those. They were suggesting $20,000 to $30,000 for a robot. At the moment, we've only got one car. We sold a second car. I prefer a robot than a second car. Now, Elon Musk said it can expand or improve economy productivity tenfold. And you start to realize when they become quite advanced, it's just, I believe that, even at 100-fold, you know, so I believe that to a certain extent because they can do a 22-hour of work, apparently, on a 2-hour charge. Now, you imagine an industry like, I don't know, elderly care, you know, in homes, elderly people's homes. You get staff coming in and staff problems, paying for that, you know, all kinds of issues there. They can only work for a certain amount of shifts. A robot could be in there, do a 22-hour shift. So you pay 30 grand for it, and it lasts for several years. So one off 30 grand lasts for several years. And so you're doing one there that basically can do a, one half times the shift of a human. And how much does a care person get? Say over 2 years, 20, 40 grand over 2 years? But this would last for like, I don't know, 5 years maybe? It just makes complete sense. And also, as production goes up, you know, the cost of these producing robots will come down. So you imagine there's a huge, you know, issue at the moment attracting low-paid workers. Robots are the answer. The absolute answer. And even for retail and all that stuff. Imagine robots in retail. Just hire one for years and they can work non-stop. All they need is a two-hour charge, a three-hour charge, and they can work for the rest of the day. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Okay, enough of that. Anyway, let's look at the market, shall we? Let's scroll right here. Let's start with the FTSE 100. It's down 0.8%, 9659. The Stocks 600 is in Europe. That's down 0.75%, 563. The S&P 500, by the way, fell. Did I cover that yesterday? I think I did. Down 1.12% yesterday. NASDAQ was down 1.9%. Russell 2000 was down 1.9% as well. I think they're looking at a bit of a bounce today. Let's have a quick look. Futures, I'm recording this at 1 o'clock, so they haven't opened yet. No, they're looking at drop again by a third of 1%. S&P, sorry, the Dow Jones a third. S&P down half of 1%, and NASDAQ down about 0.6%. So a little bit of, I can't see, I don't think it's a bubble. I mean, famous last words. I mean, yes, the high valuations on the AI stocks, but people are using AI already, you know, and so it's going to have a big future, AI. Yes, the hype tends to happen around before, you know, like if you go back to the dot-com bubble, the hype happened, you know, a couple of years before the actual people started using the internet properly, and then it picks back up. So you may have a correction, you know, 10, 20%. A correction is 10%, 20% is a crash, but it always goes up in the end. It's opportunity, I think, you know, it's not a big deal. So the worst thing is you maybe get some companies that are, you know, pre-revenue. The only, you know, similarities to dot-com is when there were companies back in the dot-com bubble that had no revenue, you know, they had nothing, they had lots of losses, and they're valued at hundreds of millions, which is ridiculous. Now the companies are valued, they are, you know, amazing companies with good margins, growing a huge amount of, you know, positive free cash flow. So it's not similar, only that valuation stretch, but not to the point where they were in the dot-com bubble. I think that something has to break for a market crash, and I don't think everything is broken yet, pretty much. So we could rise for another year or so. Or before, you know, it may have a between 5 and 10% correction. That'll be healthy. And then I think it'll carry on. I do feel, if you look at, you know, go online, look at the sort of development of AI and robots. It is phenomenal where we are at the moment. And quantum computing, you know, we are at crossroads, I think. It's almost like an exponential growth and growth in technology and quantum computing, you know, accelerates growth even faster. So it's a little bit worrying, really. What else are we on? FTSE 250 is down half of 1%. Like I said, now it's had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Out of 9 days, 8 down days. That's quite a lot, actually. What else we got? The FTSE World Index, that's down as well, a fifth of 1% to 652. The AIM All Share, it's now down 0.4% a day, now at 750, below recent support at 755. And of course, it needs a break back up above 777, pretty much, which is not doing. Brent crude. Commodities down, up 1.43%, $63.86 a barrel. Gold, just above $4,000 an ounce. It's up just shy of 31%, $4,002. Copper, it's up a quarter of 1% to $4.98 a pound. What else we got? Bitcoin, down 1.6%. Now it's below 100,000 again, 99,687. What did the Dow go yesterday? The Dow was dropping 0.9%. The dollar, pretty much flat. It's come off the last 2 or 3 days. But the dollar index, it's at 99.62. Let's look at the bond yields in the UK. A two-year yield is at 3.8, up 0.16%. The 10-year is up 0.5% to 4.46. And the 30-year is up 31% to 5.24%. A pound will buy you €1.13. It'll buy you $1.31. Anything else there? No. So, oh, just got an alert. Personal Group, holding in mind. Seems like it's breaking out at resistance there. Check that out. PGH is ticker. Excellent balance sheet. Decent growth. Good value. And a cracking dividend. What else is breaking out yesterday? I mentioned water, actually. Water Intelligence is trying to break above that. It'll take a while, I think. It needs to consolidate. But 290, a close above 290 would be very bullish. 292 maybe, close would be bullish. Ramsden's is picking up nicely from the recent sell-off that happened. It's now going back to, it recently got at a 317. It's now 345. So that's doing well. Okay, anything else? Let's go to the microcap database. So two companies here I'm looking at. So let's do it alphabetically, of course. Record, half-year financial report. REC is ticker. They deliver bespoke currency and asset management solutions for its institutional clients around the world. At 59 pence a share, they are 113 million market cap, 100 million enterprise value. So my comments here are, so H1. 2026 financial highlights, revenue down 9% to 19.2 million, net profit down 23% to 3.28, net cash up 15% to 11.38 million, and free cash flow down 45% to 4.63. The brokers have revised estimates down slightly. It's more of a timing issue here. The CEO states, the outlook for the current financial year relative to market expectations is highly dependent on timing of closing of certain projects. So they have these new funds coming on, I think it is, and they can't tell whether they're going to be actually closed or done or started, whatever. So it seems like a timing issue. And they do go on to state, we are in the middle of an important transition to becoming a business with higher margins and long-term recurring revenues, which will deliver sustained growth and increased value. So due to this uncertainty, for 2026, they're looking at revenue dropping by 4% to 40.1 million, net profit down 12% to 8.1 million, but there seems to be a rebound in 2027 where they see top line growth of 12% to 45 million and bottom line growth of 23% to 10 million. And this would put them on currently where they are at the moment on a PE of 11, EV earnings of 10. So I think that seems a good value. But of course, that's for 2026. And when was their, yes, so their next, their end of the year is the 31st of March, 2026. Half-year results were to the 30th of September, 2025. So, yeah, maybe one worth looking at. On the chart, it sort of, it rallied up recently from a low, sort of, if down at 46 pence, it rallied at 66 pence. But now it's come back down into range, top of the range, 60 pence, bottom of the range, 53, 54 pence. So it'll go sideways for a while probably, but it needs to break above that, almost 60 pence there. And that would be sort of good news there. Okay, and finally, what I do hold, listen, in your portfolio, there's always a little bit of room for a high risk reward stock. This is probably the first loss-making stock I've bought in about 2 years, I think. It's called Xeros Technology. I've followed this company for a long time, even when Neil Woodford was ploughing money into it, because I thought the technology was very good. They've just I did do a blog post on this, but a month back, to members of the ShareBeacons Investment Club, saying, listen, they've just signed a very significant commercial contract here, and it's been in the pipeline for years, and there's been delays and upsets for years and years, but it looks like they're gaining traction. By the way, XSG has developed patented and proven industry-leading technologies which should reduce environmental impact on our industries make and care for clothes. So they've got these absorbs that be captured in the machine there. that reduce water by about, I think, 50, 60%, sometimes in certain instances, almost by sort of 80, 90%, but also reduce shrinkage, also colorization. They maintain the color of a new jumper, no shrinkage, nothing. So less water, it's very good for the environment. And they've also got these microfilters that go into washing machines soon that capture 99% of microfibers that are going into the oceans and water streams. So there's regulatory backing behind this, you know, EU, UK, all this. But they've just done a deal for their orbs and their capturing technology, the X-Drum and the X-Orbs, with one of the top 10 washing machine manufacturers in the world. And this company supplies sells 7 million washing machines a year in America, Latin America. So it's a proper commercial deal. And they say they are very close to signing with another 3 of the top 10. Now, you capture those top 4, the top 10, you don't need anything else, especially when you consider this company is literally a market cap of about 13 million now. They've just raised some money today. So I did say this company, the biggest risk this company has is funding risks. They need to raise money. They had 800K and they're loss-making, and they've just raised 3 million. I think they're raising up to 6 million. And that should tide them over, as long as these deals go well, to profitability. And they'll still be loss-making, I think, for 2025, so about 2 million and 2026, but they've got enough cash to get past that. And then, because they don't manufacture, they've got IP and they license it out, it's quite a high margin business. And I'll give you an example. Where are we at the moment? We're less than 2 pence a share, okay, at the moment. Brokers have a target of 16 pence a share. That's 700% upside. And they say this is based on conservative estimates. And it is, because I did a spreadsheet looking at really low market penetration for a company like this with good margins. But the broker, for example, give potential upside for 27, 28, okay? And they're saying, now, taking into account this company did for the half year, in fact, for the full year, they did 161K of revenue in 2024. That's expected to grow to 600K of revenue by 2025, 1.4 million in 2026. But that's nowhere near where they could be, because the broker reckons 2027 base scenario is for 5 million revenue, which is what, 3 times what it is in 26, with a 30% EBIT margin, so operating profit margin. Now, uppercase scenario is 10 million of revenue for 2027 with 50% EBIT margin. And for 28, they reckon the lower estimate, the base case, is 10 million of revenue. And of course, you know, what's that? 8 times where we are at the, over 10 times where we are for last year. A 50% EBIT margin, and the uppercase scenario for 2028 is 20 million in revenue with a 60% EBIT margin. So what's that? 10% is like 2 million times 6, 12 million operating profit. And you're talking about a market cap here, that's upper estimate, a market cap here of like 13 million. So it's one of those stocks with very high risk reward. The biggest risks, I think, were funding. Now they've got that away. The story, it's a bit of a story stock, but it could be, it's maybe one of the few examples of one of these blue sky story stocks that could be transitioning to a proper profitable growth stock. Okay, and that's a hard transition to make. There are many, many companies in the market that are story stocks that are pre-revenue loss making. Very few of them, I'd say maybe less than 2%, 1 or 2% actually go on to commercialize, generate growth in revenue and become profitable. This could be a company, I mean, if they announce more deals in the next, because they did say in the next few months, they're announcing some more big deals with the OEMs, top 10, then this could be one of those stocks. It's going to take a while before they get to that revenue generation, but they've got royalties coming through for next year, which will reduce losses by a lot. But I think it's one of those things, high risk reward, it's verging on a punt stock. But if it plays off, you're talking about a multi-bagger, multi-bagger. And like I said, the broker has forecasts of 16%, 700% price target upside. And they say that, and there's potential for a lot more upside. And you can see, if you go through the presentation, and I've gone through it with all the documents and spreadsheets, and even assuming low penetration of markets, it is a silly upside. You're talking thousands of percent if they get even a 3%, coverage on some of these markets. So it's worth a look. It's one of those, it's a bit of a fun stock. It could be a big upside. But as is the case with a lot of these companies, they don't achieve that. But this is one of those companies that may be on the brink, on the cusp of becoming commercial and transitioning from, like I say, a story stock to a proper growth stock, commercial growth stock. So it's called Xeros. XSG, there'd be many false dawns. Is this another one? I don't know, but I'm in it for a little go, a little punt, and I do like the technology. It makes a lot of sense. So check it out. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Listen, nothing's investment advice. I'm just saying do some research on it. Of course, I'm biased. I hold a little bit of stock here, and so I will be biased, and I look on the positive side. Otherwise, I wouldn't invest, would I? But, it can go wrong, like any investment. So please do lots of research. And like I say, I've only put a small amount into it because, that's the level of risk-reward. I've weighed that up and thought, well, I can afford to put a little bit of money into this. So I've gone for that. Thanks for listening. Have a nice weekend. And we'll speak to you next week.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.